This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
241-0. How'd you like to play that game? How'd you like to be the one sitting at zero
when 241 votes have been cast against you?
It's not a close vote. It's not a divided department.
When the Pima County Deputies organization put the question to its membership, confidence or no confidence in Sheriff Chris Nanos, every member who cast a ballot voted no confidence and resign.
And resign. Not just, we don't like you, go do what you will with this information, because clearly you haven't the last time we voted. Now we're going to put it out there, no confidence, and resign. We're telling you with our vote what we'd like you to do. 241 deputies, 65 abstained. Not one person voted to keep him and continue. Zero. These are the investigators, the detectives, the people inside that building every single day running the most high-profile missing persons case in this country, and they have unanimously told you they don't trust the man in charge. That alone should be the story. But the deputy's vote isn't actually the thing that moved the needle. What moved the needle happens next. The Pima County Board of Supervisors went into closed session for nearly 3 hours. When they came back out, they voted unanimously to invoke a state statute, an old territorial era law, rarely used, occasionally dusted off for when a county government decides it's had enough, requiring Sheriff Nanos to submit sworn statements about his conduct and his department. Then Supervisor Matt Hines, the Democrat, who put the item on the agenda, said out loud what a lot of people have been circling around. Nanos' 42-year career in Pima County, quote, seems to be based on fraud. And then he added the line that gave this some real teeth. If Nanos refuses to comply with the board's order, the board can move to remove him from office. Not censure, not a strongly worded letter, remove him. That's the mechanism. That's live right now. And Nanos' own lawyers know exactly what it means, because within hours of that vote, his office released a statement. The sheriff will comply with the statute. He will provide the report. So how did we get here? How does the sheriff of one of the largest counties in Arizona, a man who just won re-election 16 months ago, end up with his own department voting 241-0 against him and his supervisors invoking a law from the territorial area to put him under oath? Well, the short answer involves a filing cabinet in El Paso, Texas, that said untouched for over four decades. And if you followed our earlier reporting on Nanos's El Paso record, you know the broad outlines. 8 suspensions, 37 days without pay, 26 allegations over 6 years, a robbery suspect who ended up in the intensive care unit, a grand jury, and a forced choice in August of 1982. Resign or be fired. He resigned. He was 26 years old. He came to Tucson 2 years ago, or 2 years later, listed El Paso on his resume with a departure date 2 years later than the records show. So he lied on his resume and built a career inside a department that had no idea what was sitting in a filing cabinet back in Texas. Again, it's the 80s. There's no computers looking these things up. There's no cross-referencing. There still isn't today in most cases. People relied on each other's words and apparently didn't do a whole lot of cross-referencing either. Supervisor Hines' framing is blunt. If the foundation was fraudulent, the 42 years built on top of it are, in his words, fruit of a poison tree. Now, look, the implications of this are rather large
42 years as a sheriff. There's a lot of cases that have come and gone through that department in 42 years that he was involved in. That's a lot of cases that are going to have a second, much closer look done at them. And they're going to try and argue, well, if he shouldn't have been there in the first place, how can my client be guilty, Your Honor? Now, that ain't going to go very far in most cases, but I can guarantee there's going to be a handful that are going to get a good second look that maybe otherwise wouldn't. And that's probably a good thing. What's new and what changes the stakes considerably is the deposition. In December of last year, Nano sat down for a sworn deposition in a federal lawsuit filed by his own union president. At some point during that six-hour session, an attorney asked him a direct question he had not been asked before in this sort of a setting. Had he ever been suspended during his law enforcement career? His answer, no. He later said, after the Arizona Republic published the El Paso records, that he interpreted the question as referring only to his time in Pima County. Even though the question clearly stated, in your law enforcement career, remember we had this problem a couple weeks ago, Nanos, where you weren't really used to people questioning you or having to be accurate with the words that came out of your mouth that seemed like a really, you know, elusive thing to you. We've already gone down that road, so you already know people are holding you accountable. You're doing a deposition in your law enforcement career. There really isn't a lot of room for misunderstanding or misinterpreting unless you're just a fucking idiot, which you kind of are, it seems. When they asked me the question, he told the Tucson columnist, I'm thinking of right here in Pima County, 42 years back. He added that he told the attorneys throughout the deposition to rely on documentation rather than his memory because the records would be more accurate than his recollection. So you forgot all about all those reasons 42 years ago why you were not fired, but you quit on your own accord in lieu of firing. You tend to remember those sort of things. I mean, if you don't, let me go back to what I just said earlier, the effing idiot thing. I guess both can be true. You can decide what you think about that explanation. Rely on the record. Okay. How about don't blatantly lie? Or if you don't know, say you don't know. You don't give absolutes when you don't know. This is how people like this try to get away with shit. They try to confuse you, try to confuse the process, try to make you second guess. Well, maybe I'm wrong for asking the question that way. If I did it this way, maybe I would have gotten a different... It's my fault for you lying in a deposition. No, it's not. It's yours, Chris Nanos, and you failed and you were caught and now you need to face the consequences. What Supervisor Hines thinks of it is not ambiguous. I was very surprised, Hines says, and I was even more surprised that the revelation wasn't followed by his immediate resignation. This is disqualifying for any county employee, but especially for one in law enforcement. We could be forced to reopen every case he's ever contributed to during his entire career at Pima County. This is what happens when you put egotistical, narcissistic maniacs in power. And go, he seems like a guy I like to have a beer with. Yeah. The Unabomber would also be an interesting guy to have a beer with. Would I do it? No. He's also publicly raised questions as to whether Nanos misrepresented his history in sworn testimony, a question that the board's attorney are now specifically tasked with examining. Which brings us to the trap hidden inside all of this, and it cuts in a direction that most people haven't gotten to yet. The state statute the board invoked
has a specific and narrow trigger, a county board can move to remove an officer who refuses to appear before them or refuses to submit the required sworn statement. That's the lever. That's where the removal power lives. And Nanos, or more precisely, whoever is advising Nanos, read that statute and gave the only answer that keeps him in his chair. I'll comply. I'm not refusing. I'll do it. If he shows up, submits a sworn report, and answers the board's question, even unconvincingly, even with explanation that supervisors don't buy for a second, the removal mechanism under this statute may not apply anymore. The county is already paying outside attorneys to figure out exactly what the board can do if he complies, but his answers don't hold up. There's a parallel court case working through a related question in Maricopa County right now involving county recorder Justin Heap. Nobody has a clean answer yet. The board's outside counsel comes back on April 7th with the specific questions they intend to put to Nanos. That's when we find out whether this instrument is actually sharp or whether compliance alone is enough to defuse it. The recall is a separate track, and it's a steep one, more than 122,000 valid signatures needed with a hard deadline. The effort is being led by a Republican congressional candidate, which means it's already carrying a partisan framing in a county that went Democrat in the last sheriff's race by 481 votes. And this week, the recall campaign didn't yet have a website. That's not the organizational infrastructure of a campaign that's about to collect six figures in a verified signature contest against a hard deadline. So here's the math as it actually stands. The deputies have abandoned him unanimously. The supervisors have called his career fraudulent and invoked a territorial era law to put him under oath. His defense of his deposition answer that he was thinking only of Pima County is now a matter of public record, and the question of whether that defense holds legally is now in the hands of outside counsel. The recall needs mass mobilization in a county of nearly a million people with limited organizational backing and a ticking clock. And the board's next move depends entirely on what its lawyers tell them they can actually do with a sheriff who says yes. April 7th, that's the next date. That's when the board hears what its attorneys have drafted. That's when we find out whether the language they invoke has real consequences or whether it's a mechanism with a compliance escape hatch built into it. And while all of that grinds forward, a family is still waiting. Nancy Guthrie has been missing since the 1st of February. No arrest, no publicly identified suspect. The sheriff running your case is preparing a sworn statement to preserve his own position. The machinery of accountability is moving slowly. And in the meantime, somebody out there knows what happened to an 84-year-old woman who didn't make it to church. And they haven't said a word. That's where things stand in Pima County. The pressure is real. The tools exist. Whether any of them land is a different question entirely. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'll continue it there. You know those folks who just don't know how to take a damn cue? He's clearly one of them. Can you imagine if you're the leader of an organization, any organization, whatever it may be, you're a boss, you have people under you in some way, shape, or form, and every single one of them, they think you're full of shit. They think they have no confidence in you whatsoever. They're voting against you. Not one person is standing up going, maybe he's misunderstood. Maybe he just, you know, he does things a little different. You know, not one. Everybody wants you gone. Why would you even stay? What point are you going to make? You're not going to turn. You're not going to get them to come back around and go, oh, we were wrong. Call it a day. You're getting up there too. Dude, go enjoy your retirement. Consider yourself lucky that for 42 years you bamboozled Pima County on your previous record and got away with it. Go retire. And let the only people who have to deal with your bullshit be the ones that are at the drive-through coffee bar that you hit up in the morning. Made you your regular today, Chris. That's not what I want. I want, like, well, you've been getting the same one for the last 7 days. We just thought we'd be nice. I want, you know, who the fuck knows? Go take your torment and control and chaos and lies and delusions and narcissism into retirement. Go be a Walmart greeter. Go do something you're more qualified for, because I'll tell you what, being sheriff ain't one of them. And 42 years have proven that. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'll continue it there. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you get podcasts so you don't miss any of our episodes. Wherever you go, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, we are there. Search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Right now, do it real quick so you don't miss it, and take us with you. We'll keep watching this. We'll continue our conversation in the comments. Until then, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
Here's what keeps showing up in a lot of your messages, is we're going to be getting into the Nancy Guthrie case a little bit more today and the latest with the Nanos investigation. Forget the board meetings, forget the recall signatures, forget the politics. You want to know one thing with all of this happening. Is Nancy Guthrie still the priority? Is somebody still fighting for her? You got a lot of questions about that, and there's a lot of noise, as you've been hearing us talking about with Sheriff Nanos. Robin Drake, retired FBI Special Agent, Chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, is always my co-host with us as we're discussing this today. Let me ask you this, Robin. Even if Nanos has changed over at this point, let's say he steps down and you get somebody new in there. It's a new position. Somebody's going to, you know, hit the ground running, but they're hitting the ground running when somebody else has been in that position for quite some time. So it's all going to be, you know, a bit new territory. How does that affect this investigation?
So that's a great question. I don't think it would affect the investigation and the investigators and what they're doing in their day to day. I think they're locked in. I think they're doing, and I think they're working very, very well with what they have. Now, what'll be really, really interesting if that does happen is a fresh set of eyes looking at what they do have and seeing what new decisions they make on what to share with the public. I think you need to, so here's what the public would love. The public would love some transparency about what transpired, what incongruencies meant what Nana was said. They'd look to, for explanations behind, he says this and he says this, he says this and he says this. And so someone with a new set of eyes looking at what they have right now would then be able to hopefully put out some corrected information, some more accurate information, consistent information, and hopefully a little more nuggets that would help generate leads, because that's what they still need more of. They still need more information coming in, because if we're not on someone, if we don't have an arrest, they obviously aren't zeroing in close enough to be able to do that. So maybe with a fresh set of eyes at the top, taking a little bit more of a concise angle on what to put out to the public would help that a lot. Like, so for example, I don't know the impact on this yet, but Savannah, she just did this interview as of the recording of this earlier today or yesterday, and she's talking about the back door being propped open. I'm like, huh, that completely added some new data points to the way I was thinking about this. Because remember, I'm like 60-40-60 on the home invasion for attempted burglary gone sideways. But back door propped open, I got to do some more research now. I got to take a second look at this, because how does that affect just that one little nugget that she put out there kind of shifts this whole thing. Now, granted, is that going to help bring Nancy home, you know, sooner or later? Don't know. But that kind of information might have helped early on.
And there's a psychology behind, you know, releasing some of that information or not, and it's very investigative, and it makes sense, because you're going to get a lot of people that are going to claim they have knowledge of this or that, and there's certain details that need to be held close enough to the vest so you can determine whether that person actually knows what the hell they're talking about or not, or they're just making up a story. But sometimes revealing some of that information earlier on gives you a better idea
of who to be looking out for, profile-wise,
right,
in the general public. Now it's one thing, you know, the investigators to know who they should be looking out for, but there's only so many of them, and there's, you know, it's a gazillion to one when it comes to the general population versus an investigator. There's a lot more eyeballs out there on the streets. And it felt like this case, with everything, and we've seen so many cases where things get held so close to the vest, a resource of the general public was not being used to help find an answer. And I get it can create a lot of noise, and there's different, you know, strategies depending on the investigator of how they're going to use it public, if they're going to use it public or not. But in so many cases, especially today, the information that is found, that the public comes out with because they're given enough to work with, ends up solving so many more cases than not, than holding the information back, than just being like, we're going to solve it based on our handful of people here who are investigating into the information only we know. This seemed like there was a very large missed opportunity, and there could have been a lot more information maybe thrown out to the public that maybe would have resulted in more valuable leads early on. I don't know. I mean, that seems to be true in a lot of cases. What's your thoughts on it on this one?
Yeah, and also the reverse of that, you know, not just getting leads in for more information. Again, because again, as most of us in law enforcement do, we don't really like second guessing what law enforcement is doing because we don't have the full picture
sure.
in their decision process. And hell, I mean, granted, he's as Nanos, as dumb as he's made some of these things, he's got a lot more experience than I do, you know, about twice as much, really. I did 22 years with the FBI. But so I won't always discount everything they're doing because there's some thought going behind it. Who knows what the impact of it is. But to that end, when it's not just about the impact that that information has on the public for generating leads, but also we've talked about a lot, you and I, about the pressure that information then puts on the perpetrator or the people surrounding them. So imagine this. If Nanos had, again, just the thought experiment, who knows the difference would have made, but just a few more nuggets of details like the door being propped open or maybe one or two others, what kind of message that not just sends about who to look for the public for leads, but also the perpetrator and or their tight circle of people that might know about this? Oh my God, they actually saw that. They paid attention to that. I didn't realize I did that. Oh my God, they're on to me. Again, that pressure valve starts pushing on it because they think they're closing in and pops and someone leaks and someone gives a tip. So by not, again, I don't know their decision process on what to do or not to do to kind of put that and apply that pressure publicly, but we've seen so little for such a long time that why not try it? Why not do something more? But that's how I think it'd make it, not just for the leads generated by the public, but also by putting pressure on the perpetrator themselves and their very tight circle that may or may not know this. Put that pressure on their enemy. This is my only chance to save myself is to turn him in and get the $1 million.
Where do you think that's at? Because that certainly has been an angle that we've talked about for quite a while in this case, is the how do you inspire someone to come forward with information? If no one's been inspired by now, is anyone ever going to be inspired?
I think it diminishes every day over time. But what will happen, so here's what does happen over time. As the perpetrator of this gets more comfortable with the fact they got away with it, their mouth starts running. And they start leaking information, you know, and so that could happen. He might get arrested for something else. And so he'll start doing a jailhouse kind of leaking, you know, about, oh, I did this and got away with it. So it could happen that way. But if the people surrounding him don't feel the pressure that they're getting close to them, why would they turn them in? Because they have more to lose than they would to gain, potentially. Because again, people fear jail more than they want money, what the study shows anyway.
Does someone like Nanos even care about credibility? I mean, or is he completely, is he tone deaf to it? You know, because the way that he's been acting, the statements that he's made, he doesn't seem to be affected by the ridiculousness of some of his statements and the criticism that comes after it. It's just kind of like, And it just brushes off his shoulder. And I think we all know folks like that. It seems to be a lot more dangerous when you have someone who has this level of power that doesn't seem to care. But does credibility matter to someone like this? Especially, you know, and I get like making forward-thinking statements about we're getting closer and bullshit like that. And they keep, you know, he's said that 1,000 times. We're getting closer. Are we? Are we? I mean, or are you just saying that aloud? I mean, and is it wrong to say that, I guess, aloud in something like this? I mean, there's people want to have hope. People want to have faith, but they also want facts and reality. Right. And when I go to police, I kind of want facts and reality. I don't necessarily want, you know, hope and conjecture.
Yeah, I think he's more on the hope and conjecture. Credibility, it's interesting. You know, I can't think of how he would even think of that. I don't think he thinks in terms of credibility. I think his entire laurels, I imagine, are resting on the success of his department. So credibility doesn't really come into play that. And because he's been in charge, I mean, also, he's got 42 years of being inoculated against public opinion.
Yeah.
It hasn't bothered him for that long, so it's not going to bother him now. I mean, this is just another day to him. That's why it's interesting, because people keep knocking him on going to the gym, going to basketball games, driving his sports car around, you know, because the image it's putting out there is not a good one, right?
Well,
he's inoculated against it because, you know what? He does it every day. He don't care. It's just rolls
another
right
day.
Off.
This yep. is just another investigation for him. And it happens to be that there's far more eyes on him than there ever have been. But that doesn't appear to affect him in any way, shape, or form. He doesn't care.
Nope. You know why? Because he knows the odds of removing him from office.
Yeah, when you have that kind of, when you yield, I mean, is that something that really should be reviewed across departments, across municipalities, across the country? Of what levers do we have in place to remove someone should we get someone like this in power? And it's going to be interesting because, you know, some places, you know, there already is leadership in there that is running and existing because this kind of structure exists. So there's not going to be a whole lot of interest in changing that up. But there will certainly be municipalities and jurisdictions where they're open and they have the ability to make some change. But again, like I said in our other piece, it really feels like these sort of considerations were not made when these sort of rules and laws were put in place, because the assumption is made that everybody is going to be really on the up and up and nobody's going to be in there that has some sort of a toxic personality or some sort of narcissistic type personality. And I'm not diagnosing him, but that is incapable of seeing their own flaws and just running the ship into a wall, saying there's no wall ahead. It's like, no, there clearly is. He doesn't see it, does he? He doesn't see it. He's going straight towards it. Well, what levers can we pull? We don't have any to pull. That seems to be kind of where we're at. Maybe we should get those in place to prevent the next Nanos.
It's really interesting. It's a great question. I don't know. I've never, because you now know what I'm going to do after this. I'm going to deep dive in research, right? But I'm really curious too, because so here you have, he's an elected official. And now if he's treated like every other elected official, but he's in this position, that's an interesting dilemma. Because if you look at a politician, like say the county supervisor, if the county supervisor there is an elected official, who really is the county supervisor leading, or are they just managing? Are they managing resources? Are they managing budgets? They're really in a position where they're not leading. They're managing the welfare, the structure, the infrastructure, all the things we need, water, power, all those things. You know, that's what that mechanism's set up for, you know, the small, you know, local governments. Mm-hmm. But Nanos, now here's another person that's in an elected position just like that, that's in a more of a management role. Now you have someone who's actually elected to lead hundreds of law enforcement, you know, sworn officers and protect public safety at a very personal one-on-one level. That requires, I would think, a hugely different skill set and different, I would think, different level of accountability for their actions, because it affects many more people on a much more grander level. So you wouldn't think that the lever to remove a town supervisor would necessarily should be the same as the ability to remove a sheriff who is inept, corrupt, or incapable of performing the function of their job, which is public safety.
I mean, Nanos, I mean, he's not striking me as someone who's like, you know, malicely trying to do harm.
No.
Incompetent. You know, I mean, exactly. It's like, just go retire. Just, you know, go enjoy your time, whatever.
Definitely,
you know?
Incompetent messaging, because it's messaging what it comes down to. Who knows behind the scenes? But obviously, behind the scenes, all his cops that signed the petition said, you're incompetent. So it's one thing, public opinion, as well as internally. You got issues.
What if he was? What if he, I mean, and I'm not saying he is, but like they essentially, the way it's structured right now, you could have somebody who's in there doing a lot of nefarious stuff. And there's really not a lever to get rid of them. I mean, there is the, everybody's like, oh, there's the recall. Good luck with that. I mean, just good luck. I mean, so, honestly.
I think there's 5 to 10%. I looked up, I did the research on how that would happen. It's like 5 to 10% chance that even would be effective.
It's maybe that's a lever where it's like, maybe like the, because it's a set number. It says it has to be X amount. And it's basically, they need 120,000 signatures, verified signatures, not just let's go in a website and click a box. Now we're talking like literally going door to door. What's your name? What's your address? Can I see some ID? And then we got to find a way that we can actually back this up so they can't just go and, oh, you made up all of these. No, this has to be verified.
As I remember it from the research I did, again, I'll probably get it wrong, so correct me, but it has to be 25% of those who actually can be verified that actually voted for him in the first election or voting in the first election. You know, so they have to verify that they actually voted in the election of him, and it has to be at least 25% of that voting population.
It's something like that. I don't know the exact stat. Yeah, but it is something where it's like, I mean, can it be done? Yeah, I mean, in theory, I mean, I guess my microwave could also power us to get to the moon, too, if it were, like, reprogrammed. But is it going to happen? No. Right. I mean, it's a feat that is almost impossible to reach with the amount of manpower you would need to get there. And I think you'd almost need a sheriff in place that's really doing absolutely horrible shit, not just incompetent, to, I think, drive that level of turnout to sign this thing, to really, and I don't know if they have it. I don't know if there's enough motivation here to do it. Just being incompetent, I don't think drives that level of outrage.
It's too bad the board, you're too bad that the board, you know, like my town I live in here in Virginia, you know, we have a board of supervisors, and each of those board of supervisors are elected by their districts. And in our county, and I think we have like 5 or 6 of them in my county that are on the board of supervisors for each of the districts in the county, like Nanos would cover, like our sheriff. You would think that, all right, so the recall won't work or isn't effective. How come the board of supervisors, you can make a simple rule, like it has to be a unanimous decision by the board of supervisors based on what the union says or based on what, you know, that they could actually call for a vote of no confidence by the Board of Supervisors to have a re-election. Now, granted, he could run again, and then maybe he wins. All right, but why not just trigger that if in extreme cases, you would think?
Well, and all it would do is, and if they could get the signatures, it doesn't remove him. It just triggers a new election.
Yeah. You need to make it easier.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like maybe the entry level, the point of entry should be a little more realistic. When you have a situation like this, don't make it so like anybody can just keep recalling back and forth. That gets to be a little monotonous and unproductive. But maybe make it so it's not like end of the world type scenario where if you need to pull this lever, you can do it. More like there's smoke and there's fire over here. We need to put it out before it completely engulfs the whole building. Yeah. But we got to wait till the fire catches a majority of the structure before we do that. Well, it's really bad right now. Why don't we do it? We got to wait. That's the criteria. And that's kind of where we're sitting.
Yeah, the union's actions on this are the ones that really kind of shifted my focus, because until the union like voted unanimously a vote of no confidence against him, he was in the back of my mind of this.
The first time, though.
I know, but I mean, it was one of those things. I was disregarding him as just regular noise and upper level management, because I'm so used to seeing it not just on cases that we cover, but all over. And that's why when you have, I always used to say, no matter what job you had inside the bureau, it didn't matter. If you found a great boss, that's who you hold on to, and you never leave their side because they're that rare. And so with Nanos, I was totally dismissing them. But when you actually have such an outcry internally, that's what really got my attention on this. I said, yeah, he needs to go.
And that's what I was surprised, because when I saw the headline yesterday, I'm like, well, I know this vote happened a while ago. One did. No, this is, yes, this is like
fresh.
2 days ago.
Yeah,
like, this is
one.
A brand new vote.
Yeah.
So it's not the first time that they've gone through and done this poll and gotten this response.
Because, you know, it's interesting because, I mean, so you put yourself in those union members' shoes. This is them now saying, oh, my God. This might be our chance to finally get rid of him.
Yeah.
And so that's what triggered it, because they see this as an opportunity to right their own ship as well.
We'll see if it does anything. Fingers Your thoughts crossed. In the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We will continue our conversation there.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Normally in these ads, you'd expect someone like me to ask you to buy something. But I want to ask you to do something different. I'm Dave Farenthold, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm an investigative reporter, which means that I follow the money, inside of government and outside of government. The point of my job is to find things people are trying to hide. It involves talking to lots of people. It involves looking through lots and lots of documents. And if there weren't folks like me to go beyond the surface to understand who is really shaping what the government does, the public will be left in the dark about what the government's doing with your tax money, what the government's doing to you through regulations and spending. If you're like me and you think this kind of journalism is important, seek out a news source that does firsthand, fact-based reporting. If that's the New York Times, thank you. If that's your local paper, that's great too, because where you get your information matters.